You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 398 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Thursday evening into Friday morning. The draft is rapidly approaching, and that'll be, of course, the central topic on basically all, if not all, almost all of our episodes between now and June 21st. That is definitely going to be the case today, as on the agenda later on the podcast, we'll be breaking down all of the wings and sort of combo forward types that are available in this draft. If you guys missed these podcasts, I did an entire show dedicated to point guards last week, and earlier this week, I did an entire show dedicated to the shooting guards and combo guards in this class. Also, our most recent episode was a podcast in which SB Nation's own Ricky O'Donnell, NBA draft expert, came on the podcast, talked a lot about the various prospects available at the top of the draft, as well as later on in the draft. And I would definitely encourage you guys to go back and check up on those episodes if you missed them, or if you're a new listener, welcome. And here we are to talk about the Atlanta Hawks and everything that's going on in Hawksland. First on the agenda today, a couple of news items. The Milwaukee Bucks officially announced, or I guess officially the word broke, that Mike Budenholzer will be hiring away all of basically all of his staff, not every single member of his staff from last year in Atlanta, but the great majority of his staff from Atlanta will be going to Milwaukee. That includes Darvin Ham, Taylor Jenkins, Ben Sullivan, Patrick St. Andrews, and Charles Lee. That was reported by Chris Fivelmore of the AJC, among others. And no surprise here, but I just want to say that out loud. That was always the rumor and the reporting, but now it looks like it's going to be definitely the case. Those five guys will be joining Bud in Milwaukee, and we wish them the best, to be sure. Moving on from there, a couple of workouts to catch up on. On Wednesday, it was kind of a light workout for the Hawks. Omari Spellman of Villanova was probably the only guy that could be conceivably drafted by the Hawks. And even then, I think Spellman's probably a little bit, be a little bit of a reach for the Hawks, although people do like Spellman around the league. At least for some people, is seen as a top 40 guy. I think I probably have him a little bit lower than that, but he wouldn't be the craziest pick in the world for Atlanta. But aside from that, it's a pretty light workout on Wednesday. Thursday, a little bit more interesting, honestly. Bruce Brown of Miami and De'Anthony Melton of USC worked out for the Hawks on Thursday morning as I'm recording this morning. Both guys are very interesting prospects. I think I have Melton as a top 20 guy in this class pretty easily. He's someone that I am hugely high on. I'm a big fan of Melton, probably higher than the consensus on him. I also like Bruce Brown. I think he's a top 30, 35 player in this class, would certainly be in the mix for Atlanta at 30 or 34 when they get there. So a couple of just guys to keep an eye on. The Hawks had an up-close and personal look at those two players on Thursday morning. And lastly, Michael Cunningham of the AJC, who's, of course, the Hawks beat writer, does a great job over there at the AJC, reported earlier this week that Mo Bamba is tentatively scheduled for a workout on June 14th. He, of course, is the Texas center consensus lottery type of prospect. Also, MC reported that Jaren Jackson Jr. of Michigan State, Marvin Bagley of Duke, and Trae Young of Oklahoma will be visiting the Hawks sometime in the next week or so. No specific dates there, and the Hawks are not officially announcing workouts until the day before, until the afternoon before, I should say. But it looks like the big guns will be coming into town next week. It's already been reported everywhere that DeAndre Ayton of Arizona, who's likely to be the number one overall pick, is only going to do that one workout in Phoenix, so I think he's not going to be coming to Atlanta. And Luka Doncic, people were asking me about Doncic and potential workouts. He's actually still playing in games. They had a game yesterday, actually, with Real Madrid. So he's not going to be coming over for workouts for anybody. So that's not a Hawks-related thing. That's a Doncic thing. He's definitely not going to be working out for teams. And teams will have to operate on the considerable amount of tape that they have, as well as any interview stuff that they could put together with Doncic in advance of the draft. So with that said, thank you for listening to the podcast, as we always have been at this point in time. For long-term listeners, I really appreciate all the support that we've had. New listeners, welcome to the party. Please subscribe to the podcast. It's huge if we can get some five-star reviews and ratings and that kind of stuff on the show. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, all those fun avenues, and I really appreciate that. So I wanted to at least take a moment to remind you guys that it's very important that you subscribe, leave feedback, leave positive ratings and reviews, and also tell your friends about the show. Help us to grow it, especially if you know a Hawks fan or two in your life. It's not already listening to the podcast. Please recommend it, and help us to grow the podcast in the coming days. And with that, we get into the meat of the podcast. First and foremost, we'll go over the combo forward types in this class. Basically, these are guys that are not pure wings, but also not pure bigs. So guys that can play small forward and a little bit of power forward and kind of do everything. Of course, prospects are very difficult to classify in this positionless NBA that we live in now. But these guys are basically, again, not bigs, but not pure wings either. And there's a bunch of them to hit on here in, on the podcast. First is Justin Jackson from Maryland. He's the only guy that's not a consensus first-round pick that we'll talk about. Jackson is out of Maryland, of course, as I mentioned a second ago. Would be a reach for me at number 34 overall, but has a ton of defensive potential. It was really kind of bad last year, honestly, at Maryland, and was definitely overshadowed by Kevin Werder, who's going to be definitely something we talk about here in a second out of Maryland. But Jackson had a lot of injuries last year. Might have been a first-round pick a year ago if he had declared. There was some buzz that he would stay in the draft last year. Ended up not doing that. Going back to school, probably lost himself some money in that particular way, but defensively sort of a monster prospect. 6'7", 7'3 wingspan, has a lot of physical tools. Not someone who is the most skilled guy in the world, but definitely has some upside if he were to land in the right spot and be healthy at the NBA level. Probably would not be a pick for me, though, if I was the Hawks at number 34, but someone to always keep an eye on. And of course, he's been sort of rumored in that second round range at times. Moving on, Kata Bates Diop of Ohio State, somebody who's very, very polarizing, 6'8 and a half with a 7'3 wingspan, was the Big Ten Player of the Year last year. Probably not a huge name nationally because Ohio State was not the most, you know, sort of impressive team throughout the season, but they actually really overachieved, and Bates Diop was a huge part of that. He checks a ton of boxes, honestly. Isn't a great athlete, which is probably the biggest thing to be scared off by, and because of the fact that he's kind of old. He's also he's also 22 years old and wasn't great at the college level until last season. Did have some pretty good prospect pedigree, though, coming into last season. Had been around for a while, of course, at Ohio State. Somebody that I like as sort of a theoretical exercise. Can play a little bit of three, play a little bit of four. You know, pretty skilled, pretty sort of a jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none kind of guy. And that's sort of the worry. I think people are at least right to be a little bit concerned about Bates Diop's floor because of the fact that he is an older guy, and there's been some issues in the recent past with players of his sort of profile, sort of late breakouts in college, not necessarily translating the NBA level, but I think he's a worthy first-round pick and someone who's been mocked to the Hawks a couple of different times for a reason. Moving on from there, Kevin Knox of Kentucky. We're into a different tier here, of course. Knox, I'd be pretty surprised slash stunned if he was actually available at 19 when the Hawks were picking, but he could be a target if the Hawks were able to move up or secure another pick in that range. You know, he's been basically mocked in that 13, 14, 15 range quite a bit. And, you know, of course, we talked about this in a recent podcast, but Denver could be looking to get out of the draft if they were to sort of alleviate themselves from a tax bill. Same with Washington. There's some spots where the Hawks could certainly pick up a pick conceivably in the coming days. That'd be the only way that they would actually have a chance to get Kevin Knox, because he's probably going to be off the board in the late lottery or at least before the Hawks pick at 19. He's 6'9 with a 7-foot wingspan. I think he's probably more of a 4 in today's NBA, honestly, but something he can stick at the three, and if he can do that with his quickness and his athleticism, it definitely would play up in a lot of ways. He's really, really talented. Was a 5-star prospect, you know, one and done guy to Kentucky. Usually a pretty good pedigree there, obviously. And if you buy his jump shot, that's the biggest thing for me. If you buy his jumper as a sort of a high level asset, he's definitely a lottery pick. If not, he probably slides down somewhere a little bit into that mid to late first round range. It kind of just that's where the split is. But I do think Knox is going to be off the board, and I think it's important to note also that he didn't play with a ton of space on the floor at Kentucky. He's one of those guys who could be better in the NBA than he was in college, because I think his athleticism is going to play better on an NBA court with more space and more athletes and that kind of stuff. So keep an eye on Kevin Knox. Next on the agenda is Michael Porter Jr. Very, very interesting prospect. I'm sort of a hard pass on Porter as a top five kind of guy in this class. You know, for instance, he'd be my least favorite of the at least semi-realistic options for the Hawks at number 3 overall. I am not a fan of taking him that high in this draft. You know, first and foremost, though, I do think he has huge upside. Yeah, that has to be said. He was a consensus top 3 prospect in his high school class for a reason. Some had him number 1, even ahead of DeAndre Ayton. He's a monster prospect in that way, offensively especially, because of the fact that he's a potentially high-end scorer. If you didn't see him play at the high school level and only saw him play briefly at Missouri, that was not the Michael Porter Jr. that you'd be drafting. Porter was definitely sluggish coming off of a serious back injury, missed most of his freshman season, only played down the stretch and was sort of a shell of himself, couldn't even really elevate, didn't really have any burst. If he is in fact healthy, he's certainly a worthy top 10 pick in this class. The medical concerns, though, are real for me because of the fact that, you know, it's back injury. It's not something that's going to be be necessarily foolproof in fixing and having it never come back again. He has been publicly confident, though, that it was basically a back injury that sort of slowed him the last couple of years and just got worse at Missouri. My guard is up, though. I think at some point it becomes worth it because Porter's upside is so high, but for the Hawks, I don't see him being a target. At three would not be someone that I would be looking at there, and frankly, there's no way he's going to slip all the way down to 19 or even down to the 13, 14, 15 range that we talked about before if the Hawks were able to trade up. So I think Porter's one of those guys in this class. There's probably five or six of them that just seem inconceivable for the Hawks to actually get in this class. And given the way that I feel about him when compared to the consensus, I'm actually okay with that. I'm not a huge fan of Porter. He could certainly make me look silly because of his upside being so high, but not someone I'd be trying to invest in. He also has some off-court concerns that you hear about, you know, here and there around the league. Nothing substantiated aside from the back injury, which is definitely a worry, but, you know, makeup issues and whispers like that. When you factor that kind of stuff in with a player profile that I already didn't love, frankly, even coming into the season, those two things together plus the back injury, that's going to scare me off to be sure. Moving on from there to the final guy on this list in terms of the combo forwards in this class is Miles Bridges of Michigan State fame. He's been overshadowed in the draft process by Jaren Jackson for obvious reasons. Jaren Jackson's a probable top five pick, whereas Bridges probably won't go quite that high, but it's probably going to be a lottery pick for a reason. He was a very, very good college basketball player. Frankly, could have been a lottery pick last year had he left, went back to Michigan State. Wasn't necessarily much better as a sophomore than he was as a freshman, but had a very nice season, probably an underrated season now, given the fact that he was the preseason college player of the year. Didn't live up to that quite a bit just because, you know, they had a lot of talent at Michigan State, but at the same time, Bridges is a very, very good prospect and someone who I would certainly take in the lottery if I was a team in that range. 6'7 with a 6'9.5 wingspan. He might be hurt a little bit by his lack of measurables, but he does a lot of really good things. He's basically good at everything, frankly. He's a really good athlete. He's powerful, has a nice jumper. I think his game was going to play better in the NBA because of the positionless nature and the fact that he just kind of knows how to play and is good at a lot of different things. Again, he won't be in Atlanta's range, to be honest with you. And his upside's not quite as high as Porter's, but I think he's a lot safer than Porter. And I think Bridges is a surefire top 10 pick in this class, somebody that I really would value on a high level if I was a team, especially looking for someone who could play right away, because he could certainly do that as a little bit of an older guy in this class. Before we get into the wings in this particular group, I do have a new sponsor on the podcast, and it is Blue Chew. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in the bedroom, and you can listen up. And but the best way to do that is BlueChew.com. That's blue, like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they actually work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, no awkwardness. And best of all, yeah, it's just one of those things where you don't have to deal with anybody else. It's just you and a package that arrives at your door. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships directly, they are cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we got a special deal for our listeners, and you can visit BlueChew.com. That's BlueChew.com, and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code NBA. That's promo code NBA. Take advantage of this fantastic offer. You just pay $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code NBA to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. We thank them for sponsoring the podcast today, and please check them out. Let them know that we sent you, and use that promo code NBA. And now we can get into the wings on this podcast. A lot of guys to sort of contend with here. There are more sort of perimeter guards, combo guards, I think, in general in this range that the Hawks will be picking in, but there are a bunch of wings, and as we talked about endlessly on the podcast in the last couple of weeks, we'll be talking about even more moving forward. Wings are such in high demand right now around the league for a reason. They're very, very important in a lot of different ways, especially from a creation standpoint. 3-and-D guys, the fact that, you know, the NBA is going more and more positionless. Having a bunch of wings is not a bad thing. I know the Hawks have Torian Prince, for instance, and they have some other guys. You know, DeAndre Bembry is still on the roster, could certainly pop. At least it's conceivable in the future. They invested in a pure shooting guard in Tyler Dorsey last year, for instance. But at the same time, there's plenty of reasons to think that the Hawks could be looking in the direction of a wing, and here's a couple of them that they could certainly be talking about. In the second round range, in the 34 pick range, Raleigh Alkins of Arizona and Kevin Hervey of UT Arlington. I wouldn't take either one of these guys at number 34, frankly, but you could probably find somebody, some evaluator that probably would. Those guys are certainly not necessarily polarized, but you could find somebody that really likes them as sort of top 35 or top 40 guys in this class pretty easily. Alkins' evaluation comes down to defense, frankly. He was intriguing on that end 2 years ago at Arizona, but he was pretty bad this year, honestly. More of a 3-and-D type, and I think he's definitely showed himself to be in good shape and is ready to just go out there and defend at the NBA level, but still not somebody you can necessarily just fully trust, and his measurables are not perfect. He's not as big as you want a pure 3-and-D kind of guy to be, but in the same breath, Alkins is very talented. As for Hervey, 6'8 with 7'3 wingspan. He's very, very long. I think he's more of a pure 3, but he's got to make shots. He has a nice looking jumper, but just never didn't necessarily make a ton of shots. At UT Arlington, he's got to make more 3s to stick in the NBA, but that's somebody who you could certainly get in the second round that could have some value, and the Hawks could conceivably go out and potentially move down the second round, get more picks if they wanted to. There's a lot of open roster spots. They could look to buy a pick in the way that the Warriors were able to do the last couple of years against teams that were not necessarily looking to add guys in the 30s and 40s. So those guys would be somewhere in the mix there, if not for me at number 34 overall. Next on the list is Melvin Frazier of Tulane, 6'6 with a 7'2, yes, 7'2 wingspan. He's a great athlete, impressive defensive prospect first and foremost. He's a guy who's terrifying athletically, can really, really kind of scare you in the way that he can really fly end to end. I candidly did not know a ton about Frazier before I watched some film on him midseason and was definitely dialed on him from that point forward, because he's somebody I would certainly be looking at if I was the Hawks. You know, 19 might be a slight reach, but 30 and 34 to be sure for Frazier. He's someone who would be worthy of investment at that particular spot. Made a lot of shots last year at Tulane. People aren't necessarily sold on his jumper. I'm sort of in that camp too, but if you can really believe in the jump shot, he could certainly be a top 20-ish guy in this class. If you don't believe in jumper fully and think that he's going to be more of a project in that way, more of a potential Hawks University kind of guy, you could certainly take him at 30 or 34. That'd be a pretty good value still. I think he's more of a prototypical 3-and-D guy. He's got to make shots, but still someone who could be around and be a factor at 30 and 34. He'll be 22 in August, by the way. He's a little bit older than you would probably want, but that's what you're dealing with at the end of the first round, and Frazier is a nice prospect. Chandler Hutchinson of Boise State is next on the list. Listed at 6'7", did not measure at the combine, so you're kind of going off of the listed measurements, but looks like he has legitimate small forward size. He's rumored to have a first-round promise somewhere, because that's probably why he pulled out of the combine in a lot of ways, and that would not be a surprise to me. A four-year college guy, but someone who was really, really good last year at Boise State, can really fill it up offensively. Not a ton of upside necessarily in terms of star-level upside. He's a little bit older than your traditional sort of first-round wing kind of guy, but at 22 years old, he's still a top 25 guy in this class for me. Wings are very, very important and very valuable, and he has potential two-way value. He's a pretty good athlete, and that's someone who I really enjoy watching play basketball. Next on the list is, I believe it's Dezonin. I can't pronounce his name. Dezonin Musa. Let's just say Musa, and I think people will figure out who we're talking about. I would encourage folks to check out Graham Chappell's video breakdown over on PeachtreeHoops.com of Musa. We actually are doing a ton of these pre-draft scouting report video, kind of different breakdowns and different styles from different writers. But Graham is very, very good at checking out video and breaking things down, and he did a massive write-up on Musa that I would encourage anybody that's trying to familiarize themselves with Musa. That's one great way to do it in advance of the draft. But he just turned 19 in May, a 6'9 scoring forward out of Bosnia, and someone who's certainly been linked to the Hawks at some various times at number 19 overall. I do think defensively he's going to be sort of a scary prospect to evaluate, but he's definitely a shot maker. He'd make some sense at 19 for me, because especially if the Hawks wanted to stash a player out of their four, I have no problem with Atlanta taking four guys that could be on the roster next season, because they have so many roster spots. This is a rebuild. But if they don't want to carry four rookies, Musa could be definitely an intriguing option at 19 overall. I don't think he's going to still be there at 30. He could be there at 30. It wouldn't blow me away necessarily. But if I had to project right now, I think it's basically 19 or bust for me. I wouldn't take Musa at 19. Just candidly, I think I have him somewhere in the mid to late 20s on my personal board. Still, Musa is a very intriguing offensive prospect. And if Lloyd Pierce and company, and of course Travis Schlenk, can see something in his defense to make him seem passable, that might make a little bit of sense given his offensive upside at number 19 overall. Next on the agenda is Jacob Evans, 6'6 with a 6'9 wingspan out of Cincinnati. Definitely more of a 2-3 kind of hybrid player than a 3-4 hybrid. More of a pure wing. Has a very high basketball IQ, definitely a two-way kind of prospect. Not a great athlete, but a pretty good athlete. Doesn't really have a ton of concerns there for me. Honestly, I think he's just a pretty safe two-way prospect. His jumper's going to have to go in at the NBA level. I think it definitely can. He has a nice looking jumper for the most part. He actually worked out for the Hawks in the last couple of weeks. It wouldn't be in play for me at 19, but at 30 or 34, make a lot of sense, frankly. And Evans is definitely not a sexy pick. I think, you know, Melvin Frazier has the measurables, for instance. If you're comparing those two guys, Evans probably safer as someone who I think is just going to be an NBA player. May not be a guy who blows you away. Whereas Frazier definitely has a little bit more risk, but you know, higher upside considering all of his measurables, and somebody who I'd be very interested in the NBA draft. So, you know, Jacob Evans, somebody who is not going to blow you away. If you watch Cincinnati, I think you probably would come away with the fact that he's a good player, but someone who I probably like more than the consensus because of the two-way and defensive value that he brings to the table. Next on the agenda, a couple of more guys to hit on here. Kevin Werter out of Maryland. 6'7", only a 6'7 and a half wingspan, so a pretty neutral wingspan. Pretty much the least sexy measurements of anybody on this entire list, up and down. But he's not here for his measurements. He turns 20 in August. He's the shooter of the class, a pure shooter, someone who's been rocketing up boards since the NBA Draft Combine, where he was fantastic. I'm not quite sold on Werter on the level that a lot of people are. I've seen people have him in the top, you know, 16, 17 picks now. I would not go that far on him, but I do see it. You know, the shooting is really, really significant. He's a shot maker, first and foremost. Again, it was very, very good at the combine. I think there's also rumors of a promise somewhere in the Hawks range. Could even be the Hawks. I have not heard that directly, but certainly would make some sense given you know, the comparisons to Klay Thompson that have been out there. That's pretty aggressive, in my opinion. I don't think anybody should be compared to Klay in this class, but Werter definitely plays sort of like that in a lot of ways, and somebody who needs to get stronger, needs to have a better floor game, but definitely a smart player, has a good basketball IQ, worthy first-round pick based on the shooting and the way the league is going. That is definitely a valuable asset to have in the draft, but still, you have to take a look at him and sort of decipher whether you think he could be a two-way force, because defensively, so if he's somebody you have to hide, you're looking at a specialist. And at 19, there's definitely, you know, there's an argument for a specialist there, but if you think he's definitely a rotation player, because at 19, a rotation player is kind of all you can sort of rationally expect. But Werter has some upside beyond that, and people are really getting excited about him. It's easy to do that, so I encourage people to watch some tape on him, see how he looks. But I do like him as a prospect, just maybe not overly on board with him as someone who is now projected to go solidly in the top 20, 21, 22 picks, somewhere around there. Next on the agenda is Troy Brown of Oregon, 6'7 with a 6'10 wingspan, actually played point guard pretty much his whole life, all the way through high school, was a point guard prospect, was a five-star prospect before going to Oregon, definitely a high pedigree guy, did play the three at Oregon, was sort of a jack-of-all-trades kind of player there, definitely has an off-the-charts basketball IQ, one of the smartest players in his class and plays like it. He just knows how to play, can handle, can pass at a high level. The big question with Brown is his jump shot. A lot of Hawks fans have sort of compared him to DeAndre Bembry in that way, because he's sort of the recent comp of a guy who was a good basketball IQ guy, long, you know, passer, just distributor type in college. I will say Brown is a much better prospect than Bembry was. Brown is still 18 years old, for instance, was a five-star guy out of high school, probably maybe a little bit better athlete than Bembry. I think Bembry's actually a pretty sneaky good athlete, but Brown is a good athlete, also a little bit longer than Bembry is, and it's definitely someone who I think is above Bembry on that list. He's also not quite a non-shooter. I do think there's some worry about his jump shot playing up, but I think at some point he's going to be a solid-ish three-point shooter, which is kind of all he needs to be given all of his other tools. Brown's someone who I absolutely love. Honestly, I just have to be honest about that. At 19, he'd be one of my very, very short list of players available, especially if the Hawks go with a big in the number three spot. But really, I think even if they were to pick Luka Doncic at number three, who we're going to talk about here in a second, Brown would still be someone that I would definitely consider at number 19 overall. It'd be on my short list and definitely a consensus top 20 guy for me in this class, and someone who I'll be keeping a close eye on as the draft approaches. Next is Zaire Smith of Texas Tech. I don't think he's going to be there at 19, but it's not quite as crazy as it felt a couple of weeks ago when Smith had some real helium into the lottery potentially. I don't think he's going to get all the way there yet, so it might be a photo finish, probably somewhere in the 16-17 range for me. But you know, measured 6'4 in shoes at the combine, which was definitely a disappointment, because you know, coming into the combine, that's one of the reasons why he's probably falling right now, is that people thought he's going to be a pure small forward. At 6'4, that's kind of tougher to do, but he does have a 6'10 wingspan, and Smith's probably the best athlete in the draft. If he's not the best athlete, he's definitely on the short list of two or three best athletes in this class. He's a nuclear leaper and explosive, you know, laterally quickness wise. He wasn't a top prospect coming out of high school, but probably should have been now in retrospect. And I think he's going to be a very good defender at the NBA level, to be sure. offensively is where the questions come. He wasn't a bad shooter necessarily last year, but just didn't take a lot of shots. Wasn't very assertive and aggressive offensively. I think that, you know, part of that's just not being a top-tier recruit, not probably not having a long leash offensively, but still somebody who I think should certainly be a project moving forward. I do think probably a higher floor project because of his defensive aptitude, but the big question with Zaire is going to be his offense, what he's going to be offensively. If he's just a solid role player offensively with his athleticism and his defense, that's still a very good player. But, ultimately it's going to come down to what he looks like on the offensive end, and that's a pretty open question at this point in time. Two more guys to hit on here. First is Mikal Bridges, who is definitely going to be a lottery pick, and then we get into Luka Doncic at the end. But Mikal Bridges, definitely in the group of players alongside Miles Bridges and probably Michael Porter Jr., that the Hawks are probably going to have no chance of picking, frankly. I think he's going to go somewhere between 6 and 11, 7 and 11, somewhere in there, and rightfully so. He's a very, very good prospect. 6'7". With a 7'2 wingspan, pretty much a perfect modern 3-and-D prospect at the small forward position. A very, very good shooter. He's improving with the ball in his hands offensively. Has some concern with his age. He's already 22 years old and had a longer career at Villanova than a traditional top 10 prospect would in this day and age. But he's a pretty safe player, in my opinion. I'm a big fan of his game overall. And defensively, he's got a lot of length, a lot of aptitude. And I think, two-way wings, he probably won't be a superstar or anything like that, but he's going to be a solid starter for a long time. And that's a great value somewhere in that 8 to 10, 8 to 11 range. Finally, we get to the main event of the wings, and that is Luka Doncic. We've talked about him quite a bit on the podcast, as well as with all of our guests in the last couple of weeks, and we'll talk about him more with other guests between now and the draft, so that has to be said, but he's my number one overall prospect. Something I have to say out loud is that, Doncic has been number one for me for a long time. I do think, it's perfectly reasonable to tell me that DeAndre Ayton is number one on your board, or even Jaren Jackson or Marvin Bagley. I wouldn't necessarily, scream at you if that was the case. I personally would take Doncic over anybody in this class. I do think it's pretty close between Doncic and Ayton, frankly. Those would be my top two guys. Doncic is definitely a fantastic prospect, though, and somebody that I would certainly endorse the Hawks or anybody taking early in the draft. Part of that is the emphasis on wing and perimeter play that we talked about throughout this podcast, and just the fact that Doncic, chucks a lot of boxes there, but part of that is just that he's an awesome prospect on his own. He turned 19 in February. He's about 6'8 and 230 to 240 pounds, just a monster of a wing, physically very, very strong guy. Not the greatest nuclear athlete in the world, which we'll talk about in a second, but sort of off the charts basketball IQ, probably the smartest player in this whole class on film, has played at the highest level of the sport so far of anybody in this class, and also may not be the best pure passer in this class. Maybe Trae Young has that, but Doncic is on the very short list there, best two or three passers in this whole group, which is crazy coming from a wing prospect. He definitely, high level feel. He's a shot maker offensively. I don't think he's necessarily going to be a knockdown 3-point shooter right away, but I think he has the ability to get to that. And that's one of the big questions with this game, honestly. The biggest one is athleticism, which we'll talk about here in a second, but his shooting is something that's going to be a pivot point for him. If he's just a good shooter and not a great shooter, it's going to limit his upside considerably. If you're looking at his ultimate, 95% upside, like his absolute ceiling, he's going to have to make a lot of shots. I think he has that in him, but at the same time, if you just assume he's a pretty good shooter instead of a great shooter, it sort of lowers his upside just a little bit, even though I'm okay with that because of everything else that he brings to the table. If there is a knock on him, though, as we said a second ago, it's going to be with his burst athletically. He's not a big-time athlete necessarily. I think he's a pretty good athlete, though. I think it's a little bit overblown, all the concerns people have about him. He is very, very big, which I've noted before, but that really helps him in that area. And despite being a professional for a long time, a lot of scouts feel that he's going to be able to sort of improve on his burst when he gets to the NBA level because of the fact that the training is just better here. Frankly, get into a P3 setting where the Hawks are, for instance, if you have him have a professional sort of strength and conditioning kind of guy, get his burst up there, it's going to help him quite a bit, I think, at the NBA level. I do think separation from NBA defenders is a huge point of contention offensively. I'm not sure if he's ever going to be able to average 27 a game as a result of that. I do think he's going to be able to score, and because he does so many things well, it's not going to necessarily be a huge knock on him, even if he's not going to be necessarily like a 30-point league-leading type of scorer, even on his highest of projections. I think his floor is obscenely high. Honestly, I just cannot see him busting. That's one of the things that I will say about him. Really, only a few players in his class do I just see very, very, very little bust potential. He's on that very short list as well, just because of the fact that he sees the game so high and he's just already been so good. at a very, very high level in Europe. It doesn't mean that's necessarily going to be the sexiest thing in the world, but I don't see him failing, which is really helpful. It's always good to have a high floor in this class, and one of those things that you have to be taking into account when evaluating prospects. I do think, you know, there's a reason why he's compared to high level players in the NBA. I think he can be an all NBA kind of player. You know, there is the zealotry out there that like compares him to LeBron. I am not going to do that by any means. He's not there athletically. I do think, you know, one of the actually my favorite comps to Luka Doncic is James Harden. It's not a perfect comp, and that's one of the things you get into when you're talking about Doncic is trying to find a comparison. But if you're looking for one that is a current player that's a superstar level player that you want to compare to Doncic, Harden is the best one to do that. I'm not projecting him to be James Harden, who's a consensus, you know, top 5-7 player in the league. I'm not sure he's going to get to that level, but Doncic is definitely capable of that, and they sort of have a pretty similar playing style in a lot of ways. Even if Doncic is actually bigger, Harden might be a little bit quicker, but yeah, that's something you have to at least file away for the future. People that are asking me for comparisons. I do think, you know, the fact that he was the EuroLeague MVP at 19 cannot be overstated. He's the most accomplished European player in history. That's a line that I've said a lot, and I think it's worth noting again just because he's playing at a high level of competition than any college American player is. That's just the reality of it. I understand there's some athletic things over there in that league that are not off the charts, but he's playing against grown men and pros and former NBA players and guys who could certainly come over and play now in the league, and it's one of those things where Doncic is playing against grown men and was the MVP of the league there at 19 years old, which is just a crazy thing to consider, the youngest MVP in that league's history. Also sort of helped to lead Slovenia to a nice nice performance in Eurobasket against grown men. He was arguably the best player on that team, even though they had Goran Dragic. I think those two guys were sort of hand in hand during that tournament, and that's worth noting as well. And that was a year ago. He was only 18 at the time, so just follow that away. I can see the argument for Ayton ahead of him. I will say that. And I, you know, as far as the Hawks are concerned, in reality, I do think DeAndre Ayton is going to be off the board at number one overall. It would be a shock to everyone if he was not off the board at number one overall. But Doncic might be available for the Hawks at three. It could certainly happen. Marvin Bagley's been tied to Sacramento. Even Michael Porter's been tied to Sacramento a little bit. If Doncic is available at three, if I'm the Hawks, I'm taking him with absolutely no concern about that. If he's not on the board, then the Hawks have a more difficult decision to make, and we'll talk about that more as we get closer. But I'm on the record right now. If Doncic is available at three, he's the pick, and I wouldn't even think much more about it at this point in time. I've done enough evaluation to know that he'd be my guy at number three and would be a great fit in Atlanta. You can build around him in a lot of ways. He'd be your best prospect immediately, and you can just kind of go from there. So, you know, that's a lot to take in, I know, on a lot of these wings and combo forwards and forwards, but I wanted to at least break those guys down for you. There's a lot of those guys in this class, and it's a very, very interesting class as a result of that. In the future, we will definitely do one more podcast on the bigs, which, of course, is headlined by Ayton and Bagley and Jackson and Bamba and Wendell Carter, a lot of different, a lot of lottery guys there, and not so much depth after that. So that's something that's going to be very interesting to talk about when we get there. But, you know, still happy Friday as you're listening to this podcast. Please enjoy the weekend. We will not have another podcast until next week unless something crazy happens, but please subscribe to the pod. Do all that fun stuff, and we'll see you guys in a couple of days.